Welcome to the K-12 Breakdown with Brooks and Bronder, your daily podcast of the top education headlines from across the web. And now, here are your hosts, Mike and Susie.
Thank you, Carl Hooker, for that awesome introduction. We love hearing that every morning. Good morning. It's the K-12 Breakdown with Brooks and Bronder, where we break down the latest news in K-12 education and read it aloud so you don't have to. On this show, we dive into the top education headlines from across the web every weekday morning, ensuring you stay up to date on everything affecting K-12 education. Today, standing in for Michael Bronder is fellow K-12 leader, Leo Brehm. So thanks for being here, Leo.
Thank you, Susie. You have to start with a BR in your last name to be on this show. So
You do.
Not a lot of substitutes we have available.
I choose you, Pikachu. Okay, well, today in this episode, we're going to be exploring topics like how technology tools can help with preparedness and communication when it comes to emergencies, the need to reboot and reemphasize civics instruction, high school teacher and students who are suing over Arkansas's ban on critical race theory, and one principal's take on why educators stay in the profession, and of course, more breaking news in the world of K-12 education. Before we get started, all of us here at K-12 Leaders want to share that our hearts go out to the victims and their families affected by the tragic Baltimore Harbor Bridge accident this morning. Just a terrifying situation for so many people, and I'm sure we're all starting to just wrap our heads around it. So on that note, Leo, what do you have to share with us this morning? I know you picked an article to share.
I did. Today I picked about how technology tools can help prepare schools during for communications when it comes to emergencies. We all are pretty familiar with the emergency when something happens and making sure communication channels are open during emergencies. And there's a great article today brought to us at eSchool News by Callie Peterson out of Midland. And she talks about the advanced communication tools and technologies that help schools position themselves ahead of potential dangers and cultivate a positive academic environment. Communication is one of the most important components of school safety. Having a fast and reliable way to disseminate information will lead to quicker response times for day-to-day operations and is vital for threat assessment, developing a plan of action, and responding to emergencies. She goes on to say, to improve your safety plan with effective tools. Because effective communication is critical for safety plans, leaders must adopt tools that enable teachers and staff to maintain constant and immediate contact. So digital communication tools such as text messages are one of the most common modes of communications for schools these days, with 82% of K-12 schools using them for emergency notifications. I mean, I personally like the idea of getting text messages from my school, and I think it's really important. You back those up. She goes on to talk about how backing those up with two-way radios in the schools, and, you can't go wrong with the good old fax line that draws its power right from the Plano telephone service from the street, just in case our fancy voice over IP phones with the color screen go down. You never can tell. And of course, the cell phones are always a good backup as well. But many of our schools are built, at least up here in the Northeast, they're built pretty solid, and getting cell phone signal through them is tough. So very she true. Also goes on to say maintaining safety technology with routine testing and training, making sure that we're strengthening the safety measures at your school is important, not only to integrate effective communication tools, but also evaluate your technology infrastructure regularly. So, being on a refresh plan and your infrastructure plan, making sure that you're prioritizing, battery backups and, making sure your network is capable of carrying all that communication as needed as well. So, she does go a little bit different here. I haven't seen this in reported on in schools, but I think it's a great way. And it's to safeguard the school community with weather alert technology. In addition to security and safety, she goes, the weather is another uncontrollable factor that demands attention from schools and their districts when it comes to proactive emergency management. To stay informed of weather conditions, school districts can always monitor local news and forecasts, but also the most accurate source remains the National Weather Service. So, you know, this is a great article to check out. And, you know, as we know, the power of being prepared means we know what to do when emergency strikes. And we've had some pretty wacky weather around here. So it's probably good to stay on top of things. Some of our contacts recently told about a hailstorm down in Texas. You know, you don't want to be out having the kids out at recess during a massive hailstorm. So, and I'll pass it over to you, Susie.
That's for sure. Absolutely. We've even had a few times that we've had to take everybody to the gym for tornado warnings. You just never think that that would happen up here. So yeah, having those systems in place is hugely helpful for peace of mind and preparedness. So let's see what we have coming across the desk today. There's a lot of opinion pieces. We're not going to cover all of those, but we have coming out of the 74 by Renzo Downey. We have Governor Greg Abbott says that Texas is two House votes away from passing school vouchers. Governor Greg Abbott on Wednesday urged school voucher supporters to make the final push in the May primary runoff elections to bring a pro-school voucher majority to the Texas House. So hopefully we'll be able to find out more about that soon. Let's see, coming out of THE Journal, they have some current articles, and one of them is on the new HVAC pre-apprenticeship program, which is training high school seniors. We read about that the other day, so it's getting more press. We love that. Another one out of the THE Journal, and that one is on Los Angeles Unified and All Here Partner to launch an AI-driven learning acceleration platform. I'm surprised you didn't grab that one today, Leo. I saw AI and it had you written all over it. But the Los Angeles Unified School District. Go ahead.
I said I'm done with AI right now.
Oh, okay. All right. We're taking a break. We're on a break.
We need an AI break.
And the Harvard Innovation Labs venture All Here have released an AI-driven education co-pilot digital platform education tool, and they're calling it Ed. So it's supposed to be available 24/7 to help support students learning beyond the school day. So it'll be interesting to see what comes out of that. Oh, and I believe my first up today is going to be, I have so many tabs open. It's such an exciting news day. We have one that's out of district administration on an Arizona Board of Educators rejects the school voucher ban on luxury items and other changes. I went to read it on the Arizona Republic, but couldn't get all the way through. So you might want to try and check that out on your own if you do have subscription access. The handbook governing how parents and vendors use Arizona's school voucher program will remain unchanged next year after the Arizona State Board of Education's rejected a proposal that would have introduced new limitations. The voucher holding families told the board Monday that the changes would harm them and service providers, and that they weren't afforded adequate opportunity to provide input. Excuse me. So I'm going to go a little bit deeper. I have one coming from the AP, and it's high school teacher and students are suing over Arkansas's ban on critical race theory. So, and this one is written by Andrew DeMillo, coming out of Little Rock. A high school teacher and two students sued Arkansas on Monday over the state's ban on critical race theory and indoctrination in public schools, asking a federal judge to strike down the restrictions as unconstitutional. The lawsuit by the teacher and students from Little Rock Central High School, site of the historic 1957 racial desegregation crisis, stems from the state's decision last year that an advanced placement course on African American studies would not count toward state credit. The lawsuit argues that the restrictions, which were among a number of education changes that Republican Governor Sarah Huckabee Sanders signed into law last year, violate free speech protections under the First Amendment and Equal Protection Clause of the 14th Amendment. It absolutely chills free speech and discriminates on the basis of race, the lawsuit said. Indeed, defendants' brazen attack on full classroom participation for all students in 2024 is reminiscent of the state's brazen attack on full classroom participation for all students in 1957, the lawsuit said. Arkansas and other Republican-led states in recent years have placed restrictions on how race is taught in the classrooms, including prohibitions on critical race theory, an academic framework during the 1970s that centers on the idea that racism is embedded in the nation's institutions. The theory is not a fixture of K-12 education, and Arkansas's ban does not define what would be considered critical race theory. The lawsuit argues that the definition of the law uses for prohibited indoctrination is uses. Now I got it. For prohibited indoctrination is overly broad and vague. Tennessee educators filed a similar lawsuit last year challenging the state's sweeping bans on teaching certain concepts of race, gender, and bias in classrooms. So the article is a pretty long one, but I think it's worth diving into just to see how things are going down there in Little Rock and where they're headed. So that's my deep dive for this round. Leo, did you have another article that you were planning on sharing?
Yeah, you know, I think this one is important today. You know, this is the second part of a two-part series by Chester Finn in the 74. And I like the 74 because that was the year I was born. So, you know, this whole news thing is for me. Yeah.
Oh, there you go. Yep.
Yeah. So, you know, the article is "The Need to Reboot and Reemphasize Civics Instruction Has Never Been Greater." You know, Finn says that civic ignorance is a silent killer akin to high blood pressure. So it's easy to ignore, even as it hastens the onset of more serious maladies. So, you know, it goes into American education, both K-12 and post-secondary has long needed to reboot and reemphasize instruction on civics and citizenship. But that need has never been greater than today, as disunion, disruption, and disbelief come to characterize so many elements of American life. Schools alone cannot cure society's ills, but they could do far more to rectify people's ignorance about the principles, practices, and origins of democratic republic and the responsibilities and rights of its citizens. Finn goes on to talk about a number of worthy efforts to address this challenge are underway, including development of new academic standards and curricula for public schools. Among the most prominent of these, Educating for American Democracy, a curricula roadmap created by a bipartisan team of scholars and educators at the aegis of iCivics. And the American Birthright K-12 Social Studies Standards created by the Civics Alliance under the aegis of the National Association of Scholars. While the roadmap concentrates on inquiry and understanding, posing a myriad of questions about civics and history that students should grapple with, American Birthright is a chock-a-block with content, names, dates, events, and concepts that students should know. Each offers a framework on which to hang a complete K-12 curriculum, and I believe is an alignment of their divergent approaches would tap into nascent consciousness about among American parents about what their children should learn. And I couldn't agree more with this idea of trying to get, you know, we talk about how people are disconnected with their communities. And this is smack dab in that space. And we've seen it even in my own career time. You've seen the disintegration of, you know, of like community service learning and understanding how government works, even your local government. This coming on the heels of me being reelected to our school board in my town last night.
Congratulations.
Thank you. But the problem is I ran unopposed, right? So, and as a matter of fact, all the positions on the ballot were unopposed. And wow. I feel like that's, you know, I think people look at it in a different way when other people want to be involved. You know, even if you're running against somebody, it's not necessarily about one person being better than another. I think it's more about, you know, people just wanting to be involved more. And, you know, we see it in schools more around, you know, PTOs and whatnot, but that's really around the learning community itself. But the community at large, I think, needs more more emphasis. And I think the more that we can build it into our school programs, the better. You know, Finn goes on, you know, talking about this. The country has muddled through for decades, despite the fact that Americans now know next to nothing about civics or our history. What editorial cartoonist Pat Oliphant once called the forest fire of ignorance, never mind that just 22% of eighth graders scored as proficient in civics in the recent National Assessment of Educational Progress, and barely 25% of college-age Americans know that the vice president breaks ties in the Senate. I think that explains a lot, of what our problem is today. So he goes on to say, yet having muddled through yesterday is no guarantee of successful muddling tomorrow. The nation's citizenship woes grow more consequential as people's faith in democracy itself falters. YouGov reported late last year that almost a third of young Americans agree, many of them strongly, that democracy is no longer a viable system and America should explore alternative forms of government. And I feel that's pretty scary.
Wow.
And we're seeing it in politics today, and the divisiveness, amongst our culture, about us versus them, as opposed to coming together to, agree on something as opposed to being told what to do. And I think that's a real problem. So please check out this article on the 74, and read part one as well. I think it's a great one. It's a little long, but like I said, it's worth it.
Yeah, that was one that you grabbed that I had looked at as well. So great minds. What else do we have? We have an opinion piece that came out of also the 74 by Stephen Costeau. Some high schoolers need more time to graduate, and states can give it to them. America's schools are short on valuable resources, one of them being learning time. They are trying to make up for the lost instructional time during the pandemic and for countless hours that millions of students continue to miss by not attending school regularly. So it goes on to talk about ways that maybe they need a little bit more time to graduate. We have, oh, actually, you read yesterday, you talked about the after school program, five strategies for a successful after school program, if I
Yeah,
remember right. Was that you?
it was a great one.
So that's in there today if you didn't get to check it out yesterday. And coming out of the K-12 Dive by Anna Marad, teacher layoffs are growing and won't be going away anytime soon. When budget cuts loom, district leaders should avoid attrition and seniority-based policies in layoff strategies, a K-12 finance expert says. So maybe thinking a little bit differently are on who stays and who goes when those things happen. We also have here another one coming out of district administration. They actually have quite a few on our feed today by Matt Selesnick, whose ears should ring. We read so many of his articles. And it's another New Jersey district under federal investigation for alleged bias. This South Orange Maplewood School District has been added to a growing list of universities and districts under investigation by federal officials for alleged discrimination. So you can find that post on our feed at k12leaders.com/breakdown. And that brings me to the last one that I'm going to dive deep on, which is, where did it go, Susie? There it is. This one's coming on K-12 Dive, which is written by Kara Arundel, who I think also we have highlighted before. And it's why do educators stay in the profession? For this principal, it's a duty to do everything possible for students. 5 days after a bullet flew through Salmon Thomas L.'s office window, he spoke at ASCD's conference about why he had no plans to leave education. Being an educator is difficult but critical work because every student needs an adult who is consistent presence and who cares deeply about them. Principal Salmon Thomas L., who leads Thomas Edison Charter School in Wilmington, Delaware, told a room full of attendees at the ASC annual conference on Saturday. Thomas knows how hard leading a school can be. 5 days before his ASCD session, a bullet hurtled through his office window while he was in the room, leaving him unharmed, but his community shaken. Traumatic events such as hurricanes, pandemics, and school shootings can and do cause many educators to leave the profession. But Thomas L. focused his session on why educators stay in their jobs and how administrators can support them. I wake up every day with determination and go to bed every night with satisfaction, knowing I did everything I could for students, said Thomas L., who had been principal of Thomas Edison, a 600-student K-8 school for 14 years and an educator for 37 years. Well, that's quite the career. Yeah. After the bullet hit his office last week, many students asked Thomas L. if he was okay. Some suggested he take a mental health day, he said. He said he's fine, but days later, what was at the forefront in his thoughts was the role reversal. He's used to helping students through trauma, not the other way around. The bullet through his office window is a reminder to him that some students live in a daily fear of shootings in their neighborhoods. According to news reports, the stray bullet came from an off-campus shooting. The shooting injured one person who was not on school property. The need for students to have an adult who is consistent, caring, and positive role model is what's kept him in education for decades. Consistency matters. It also makes them feel safe, giving them a sense of predictability, Thomas L. told attendees. But providing a caring environment does not mean schools should be soft on expectations, he said. Rather, schools should strive to bring both rigor and joy to students each day. Thomas L. told the story of how years ago at another school, he helped a group of elementary students with disabilities form a chess club. Soon, many other students became interested in chess. The students became proficient players who were beating chess teams at other elementary schools. The students were ecstatic, but Thomas L. was unhappy. He saw how some students were becoming arrogant and skipping practice after they started winning, so he arranged for them to play against high school students. Eventually, they were beating the high schoolers, so he had them compete against college students in the area and against elementary school teams in other parts of the country. He brought that same approach to Thomas Edison, and in 2014, students at the school won the U.S. Chess Federation National Elementary Chess Championship. He also supports teachers. He tells educators that they are not in the teaching business, but they are in the learning business. He encourages them to be innovative and curious. As a principal, he strives to create a school culture built on accountability and trust. Trust is the engine that drives relationships, he said. For administrators, this means being open to listening to staff about their barriers, challenges, and points of frustration, and then working together to find solutions. It also means working to shield teachers from outside political pressures like book bans or the stress of high-stakes student assessments, he said. Thomas L. encourages educators to be curious about their students' lives outside of school and to be sources of strength and joy for students and staff. Have that positive outlook because there's so much negative energy around you that you're the one who knocks that negative energy out. At the end of each school year, students ask him if he'll be returning the next year, and he doesn't want to disappoint them by saying no. My story is not exceptional, he told attendees. There are thousands of you every day that make that choice to be there when you can be doing anything else in the world. So I was hoping to share something a little bit more uplifting after some of the news that we've heard today, both in and outside of education. I think that brings us to the end of another episode of the K-12 Breakdown podcast on K-12 Leaders with Brooks and Bronder. Leo, thanks so much for filling in for Mike today and helping out.
Yeah, no problem. Thanks for having me. It's been great.
All right. You can, hang on 1 second, I've lost my train of thought. There we go. Until tomorrow, I'm Susie Brooks. Like, I couldn't remember that.
And I'm Leo Brem. We'll see you soon.
All right, we'll see you soon. Have a great day at school, and remember, it's called self-control, because you can only control yourself.
That's right. And don't carry your technology in the halls, because you could drop, break them.
Great advice. Thanks, Leo.